algorithms determine which people get introduced to one another and what information they learn about one another. Decisions about which rides are offered to which drivers. The way you interact are determined by rules that are programmed, and all those kinds of detailed rules, those are the subject of market design. It's so exciting to do stuff and see it change the world. I find it very exciting to be able to go in and do something that is simple, that's well-grounded in theory, that's workable in practice, and seeing it make changes and make improvements, it's very satisfying and fun.
Last week, Robert Habeck, the German Federal Minister of Economic Affairs and Climate Action, announced the plan to use an auction to allocate gas. It is becoming increasingly likely that the supply of gas will fall short of demand in the winter or next year in Germany, and consumption will need to be rationed. So the idea behind the auction is that firms bid, and those who are willing to reduce their usage of gas at the lowest price receive a payment and reduce their consumption. So the saving occurs at the lowest price, so it's cheapest. This auction market will need to be designed. That is, the rules according to which this market works will need to be determined. And this brings us to today's topic. I want to talk about market design, which is a branch of economics, with Paul Milgram, who is a pioneer of market design and who received the Nobel Prize in 2020 for his improvements to auction theory and the invention of new auction formats. So Paul, we are very happy to have you at the KIT Paris ZEW workshop on market design.
Marion, it's good to see you again after all this break from COVID, and I'm delighted to be here with you.
As one of its pioneers, how would you define or describe market design?
Well, I think you made a good start when you described it as a branch of economics and its practice. In market design, we study how rules, algorithms, all kinds of details of how a marketplace or exchange is run, how they affect its performance, and what kinds of performance are possible. For example, in dating apps, algorithms determine which people get introduced to one another and what information they learn about one another. In auction market, the rules determine what people get to see, what order items are sold, how bidding is done. And ride-sharing platforms, the rules determine decisions about which rides are offered to which drivers. All those kinds of detailed rules are rules about how a marketplace is operated, and those are the subject of market design.
So, and in doing market design research, we work often with abstract models. So, what do you think market design can contribute to the design of real markets?
Oh, so much. Every market that uses a computer interface or an app on an iPhone or an Android phone, they have rules built into the code. I mean, the way you interact are determined by rules that are programmed, and the rules that are well written can increase participation on the platform, and they can create enormous value by, for example, matching parties to one another more effectively, or making it safer or less costly to participate. Now, market design, some of the things you do when you design these things are obvious to everybody and don't require a lot of academic study. In a dating app, obviously, you want to be introduced to potential partners who share your interests or who live nearby and so on. But there are also subtler conclusions in the theory of market design which have turned out to be really important. For example, published research teaches us that in ride-sharing systems, when the system is operating near capacity, it can serve more customers faster by delaying the timing until it assigns a rider to a driver. It gives it more options if it delays and collects additional information. These are a non-obvious kind of conclusion. And the best rules for matching kidney transplants patients are far from obvious. And new proposals would save large numbers of lives. There are new proposals being about to be implemented in France for how to do that. And then in real life and in auction markets where I've worked, radio spectrum auctions. So, you know, we made massive changes to the kinds of auctions that would be used back in the 1990s. And we continue to make changes that make it possible to trade things that were hard to trade in the past because of the heterogeneity and because of other complex constraints that related the kinds of transactions that could be done. So there are really just lots of things. Practically any time something is done electronically, rules are being written, and those rules matter, and understanding how they matter is an important part of marketplace design.
Yes, as you said, it's sometimes it's obvious, and often it's quite subtle, and we need to think about details, and small changes in rule can sometimes make a huge difference. We also had an example in our recent research where we found that a seemingly small change in the design of an auction, how it allocates support for renewables, could have a strong impact on participation, and that's bad in this case because we need participation in these auctions to achieve the expansion goals for renewables. So you mentioned a lot of examples where market design is applied, and the Nobel Prize mentions your inventions of new auction formats, and those have been put into practice. You already mentioned them. What are other examples of successful applications of market design in your work?
I introduced new methods to buy and sell radio spectrum rights using auctions, and designs based on my innovations have been copied in many countries around the world. Another example, though, that not my work, is that I think everybody encounters, whether they're aware of it or not, is that billions of dollars of value are created annually by internet advertising, where they match advertisers to consumers to make sure that the ads that are shown are relevant to you, much more relevant than they were 10 and 20 years ago. And that's done by algorithms that operate auctions. Every time a user browses to a site or picks up an app and where ads are shown, there's a little auction that's run within milliseconds. It's totally automated, that determines which ad gets shown to which users. And again, billions of dollars of values have been created that way in advertising by improving the relevance of match. You know, for myself, I am really excited about some work that I'm just beginning to do now that are about the possibility of improving non-functioning markets for water in California and other jurisdictions. In California, water markets basically don't work because of the complexities of interaction in the use of water. California water rights are complicated in a lot of ways, and that makes water sales hard. And I'm currently the principal investigator on a project to try to improve that. I think, you know, that's really exciting and will add value that people understand. And this grant is from the new sustainability school that we've just begun at Stanford University to try to allocate resources better where they're really critical resources like water.
Yeah, that's really a huge range of markets. And even within the CDW, we are working on a wide variety of markets, like markets that work without money. An example is kindergarten matching, where a team works on how to produce better matchings of children to kindergarten and save a lot of time also for the parents. Mm-hmm. And we work with the German food banks to improve the distribution of large food donations between the regions, where we envisage markets with artificial money. And, well, of course, there are markets with money, from public procurement to electricity markets to help adjust to the energy transition. Mm-hmm. These are all markets where a lot of work is currently done. But where do you see applications of market design in the future? So maybe where does research already point to possible improvements, but policies lagging behind, or where could new markets be created?
Well, that was a great set of examples for your listeners about the some of the things that can be done. I think a lot of your listeners don't even understand that there are markets without money, that markets are about decentralized resource allocation. They're about allocating resources in a way that depends on the information that the participants have and them deciding what their needs are, and they do it through trades, whether there's money involved or not. So your kindergartens and your other applications, your charitable food donations are great applications, and I congratulate you on those. I've already named for the future water rights, which is the next thing that I'm working on. But just as modern communication technologies have enabled marketplaces to emerge for sharing homes like at Airbnb or for sharing cars, the further improvements in information technology are going to make real-time sharing of other sorts possible. I'm imagining, for example, radio spectrum rights, where one user's licenses are congested because he's got a surge in use, and another company's rights are less congested, and they can be trading and sharing rights to reduce congestion and save resources. Road pricing is already happening in some jurisdictions, and again, this involves legal changes, but from the UK to China, we see pricing of roads sometimes, new markets created for that. I'm sure there's going to be more applications that will emerge and quickly, and partly as a result of better monitoring technologies, better information technologies. When I mentioned water, for example, one of the things that's happening that will enable the emergence of water market is better measurement of water use and consumption. We're able to tell now from satellites how much water is being used in a field or how dry crops are, which will also allow users to, farmers, for example, to put the water where it's needed and not spray indiscriminately, which are things that ways to be able to respond to water prices that actually economize. So those new technologies are going to lead to lots of new uses, and I wouldn't be surprised if there are many more such.
Yeah, so new technology will give us new possibilities to design markets. So it's possibly a reason why new markets are created. But with the water rights, the redesign is also necessary because of misfunctioning market. And I think water has been scarce in California for many years. So what has prevented an earlier redesign, or more generally, what are challenges to overcoming the status quo when working with policymakers in designing markets?
Well, water was is a good example. It's partly a political problem. When you make changes, often there are losers. There are people who have rights that, in the way changes have traditionally been made, that lose those rights, and they fight like hell to keep that from happening. And so, and they create political problems. They're highly motivated, and they're able to block changes through politics, through legal maneuvers, and so on. Now, but this doesn't have to be a fatal problem. And when I led the design of the U.S. radio spectrum incentive auction, we created rules that were meant to get by the political and legal problems. We had rules that protected existing television broadcasters so that their participation was voluntary. They wouldn't lose rights unless they agreed to lose the rights. And by ensuring that there were no losers, we were able to minimize the political problems of breaking these things down. It became a voluntary transaction. And when there's a lot of value being created, as there was when we were moving spectrum from television broadcast to mobile broadband, it's possible to share it in ways that allow such a process to succeed. And that involved legal changes, it involved algorithms, it involved rules that respected the rights of existing users. And those things are hard. And for example, as I've already mentioned, with respect to water rights in California, it's very hard to trade rights when you don't know how much water is being used, when measurement is hard. And the traditional rights didn't require the kind of careful measurement that the that would be needed for trading water. So we're going to need to make legal changes. We're going to need to make technical changes. We're going to need to make it possible for farmers to understand how they can grow the same crops with less water, and that involves sensors and so on, so that they know which parts of their land are dry and require being watered, and how dry they are and how much water they need. Those things will all help make it possible to use water efficiently and trade and save and to overcome the political resistance.
How could one increase the outreach of academic research into the public? Or do you have any ideas, or what is your approach?
Well, this is varied a lot by sector. If you go to Google or Amazon, nobody will need to be convinced that the way they set up the rules, that they code the rules in their programs for example, auctioning internet advertising can matter. It's the center of their business. They make billions of dollars that way, and they pay close attention. The same goes for eBay and Amazon in considering the rules of their marketplaces. And I think we're already getting traction in things like kidney exchanges, which were unheard of just 20 years ago. And they now have play an important role in the allocation of organs, and we're saving lives. And I think if you can go in and convince regulators that you're saving lives, and you can do it in a way that avoids harming current vested interests, that people are open to that. They understand the importance of that. School choice systems, they emerged in the United States. They emerged out of crises because the old systems were breaking down. I remember at the very beginning when New York City finally decided to go with a academically recommended school choice algorithm, it was because 17,000 children had not been assigned and they had this emergency scramble. They had to figure out where to put the children in schools. 17,000 children. Getting market design experts who say, we know how to solve that problem in the midst of a crisis. And I think in California, part of the reason that I've become interested in water is again, the same idea. The people have been proposing water markets for a long time, but they don't understand some of the things that I've described. But everybody understands that it's an emergency. We have water rationing. We have, record-breaking droughts. If there are ways to solve that, I think, often it takes a crisis where people say 17,000 children or water shortages or something that finally if somebody comes and says, look, we don't have to have this, there's a way to do it, and we can do it satisfying the kinds of political constraints that I've described, I think you get some take-up. I don't know whether I should add this or not, but it's worth saying. I've become a little bit more ambitious because of the Nobel Prize. I have a feeling now that this label that the Swedes have given me gives me enhanced credibility outside of academia. I could go into a government office and say I have a solution and at least get somebody to listen to me for a while. And that's a big advantage.
Given the kind of problems you described, it's easy to imagine how you find motivation to doing it. But as it has been a large part of your life for a long time, what do you think is the most fun part for you in doing market design?
Well, I must say when I first started doing market design, it was really scary. I was approached, I was just an economic theorist who worked in theory, and I was approached about the first U.S. radio spectrum auctions, and I say, well, that's real life stuff. That isn't just mechanism design like we do in theory. That's about all these details about making something work, and who am I to do that? And now I have almost the opposite. It's so exciting to do stuff and see it change the world, see it change the way transactions are done, see it add billions of dollars of value in one market after another. I find it very exciting to be able to go in and do something that is simple, that's well-grounded in theory, that's workable in practice, and seeing it make changes and make improvements. It's very satisfying and fun.